Good afternoon, everyone. This is DJ Hatsa coming to you live from Radio Laurier. This week, I have not only technical issues, apparently, because the microphones hate me. Sorry about that, folks. A little technological issues there. With me this week in studio, thanks to the magic of FaceTime, is my cousin, Rustin Fellows, student and great guy all around. How you doing, Russ?
Good, thanks, Quinter. How are you?
I am good. So we got listeners from Laurier, we got family listening. So let's get right into it. So you are First Nations. Yes?
That's correct. I'm from the Oneida Nation of the Thames and Walpole, Keshwanong, Anishinaabe territory in southwestern Ontario.
So we're going to be diving in a bit for what it's like being First Nations in Canada and a whole bunch of different stuff. So what is it like being First Nations in Canada?
Well, I don't want to speak on behalf of all First Nations, so I'll speak to my experience. I'm also someone, as your cousin, with mixed ancestry, British-Canadian ancestry. So my experience, well, there's a lot of people like me. I can't speak on behalf of all First Nations people, but in my experience, it's been a bit shocking hearing a lot over the last little while, and in my studies at university, learning about the historical relationship between Canada and Indigenous people, which got to a really bad point where I will say this full-heartedly, that the Canadian government committed a form of genocide, and genocide is still happening to Indigenous people that are suffering from diseases that could be cured. They're diseases that are often found in third world countries in the northern territories, like tuberculosis, and there were forced sterilizations, and all of these residential schools, all of these historical acts were done to erase Indigenous people, to assimilate them into a different culture, and to destroy their Indigenous identity. And that is the definition of genocide. So it's a pretty serious issue that we're having to deal with in Canada now, with trying to right the wrongs of the past and set a new course forward. And the Trudeau government made a lot of big promises, and unfortunately, while a lot of good things have happened, he hasn't quite kept to his word. And for instance, one of the big things was signing on to the United Declarations for the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Right. And that was something he spoke about, and that would be something that if we truly signed on to it, if we adopted it into Canadian law, we could really make some progress, because it would mean that Indigenous rights would be protected, and stuff like protecting sacred sites, and protecting the ability for Indigenous people to say no to pipelines going through their territories, and basically human rights and rights that are given to a lot of other nations would be respected. But that never happened, even though there was a lot of talk. That never officially happened, from my understanding. So that's why we're in a lot of the tricky
lots of turmoil.
turmoil with things.
Now, obviously, Native American and First Nations culture is a big part of Canadian culture. You were the first people here. And I know we've just talked about First Nations culture in general just over the dinner table and at New Year's. I remember you and I did a informal sweat up in Ottawa, and we were just talking about that sort of part of the Native American culture. And what would you say are some very helpful aspects of First Nations culture that you've experienced, just from your own experience, that would really benefit today's culture?
In my experience, gratitude is giving thanks for all of our relations. And that includes our family, but also our relations to the plant world and plants and animals and even the stars and things that we would, like West mainstream society would think, are inanimate. Like just being grateful for everything that we go through and everything that we relate to. Something that I really find to be a lesson that everyone can benefit from. And it goes, there's a lot of other lessons, though. There's so much knowledge about in the languages, of indigenous languages, that I'm just starting to learn about, that come from just thinking in a different language. And for instance, a lot of the Anishinaabe Mohan words that my grandmother's people would have spoken and still do speak, are all verbs. And so it's just so they're all actions. It's all always about taking action, and how we relate to things is really important. So just learning to think in a different way, I think, will help us as a society gain another perspective.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of that entire sort of verb thing, you recently got a, I don't know how to phrase this, a new name of sorts. I believe it was "He Who Raises His Hand at a Bear," or something along those lines. You can correct me on that, because I know I'm probably messing that up. What was it exactly?
So the name I received is Ronana Zagetsko, and it's a Mohawk name, actually. That was given to me by Gahantaneta, who was very prominent, and still is a very prominent indigenous activist from Ganawage. And her family and our family in Ottawa, my mom, have a very close connection, because I think partly because we're Oneida and they're Mohawk, so we're part of the Six Nations, so we're like family. And that name was gifted to me, and they call it a name that I wear around my neck, because it's kind of a name that I'll be using until I receive a more official name that I'll use the rest of my life. So this name was given to me after I told Gahantaneta about a story that really changed my life and really shocked me again. And the story goes that I was doing a fasting ceremony, and on the fourth day of not eating or drinking water, I was giving thanks for all of creation and all my relations. And on the fourth day, I thought I was had some spiritual visitors that I was grateful for, that I could come, and I heard like an eagle on the third day, and I was like, okay, I'm satisfied. But then on the fourth day, I went down to this glacial river. We're in Jasper, and I was looking up at the mountain, and I I was putting this thing back on this thing back on a tree that I had found. I realized on the last day I didn't want to keep it, and I was putting it back up on the tree. And literally, as I was raising my arms, my one arm to put it on the tree, I hear this, and there's this huge grizzly bear like 2 meters below me. Ooh. So I just, and it was trapped between, like I was, it was trapped just down the bank between this river, and I was up on top of the bank, and so I just booked it. And I ran about 25 meters until I decided to turn around once I got to a friend's camping site, and the bear came running around the corner. It had still been chasing me, and it raised its paw and went again, and I raised my hand back at it and just copied exactly what it did and yelled back at it, and it kept on. It kind of turns toward me for a second, but it kept on running, and the other fasters saw cubs, and then we heard cubs. I said, "Jeff, let me in your tent." He thought I was tripping.
And, just like no water, no food. It's not really there.
Yeah, but the other fasters, they saw the cubs. We all heard the cubs, and then we decided to go out to not fully break the fast, but we walked out because at that point there was a grizzly bear running around. I had startled it. It startled me. So, yeah, we made the decision to finish the rest of the fast in the teepee.
And generally, if you can avoid being mauled by a grizzly bear, that's generally good.
Yeah. So that was a big wake-up call for me. And it really has been a life-changing experience. And that's where I got the name Ronana Zagetsko from.
But the amount of balls it takes just to look at a grizzly bear and say, "Come at me, bro." Like, what was going through your mind? Like, I personally would have been like, "Grizzly bear, roaring at me? Nope, I'm out of here." Like, what was going through your mind?
I was like, I knew I couldn't outrun a grizzly bear. That's what they say. Yeah. So I wasn't just going to keep on running. And for some reason, when I got to the dome, which we all had to make these little domes for the 4 days. When I got to the dome, I just felt like, okay, I have like something's got my back here.
Right. So that it's not going to like sneak up around you or anything.
Yeah. So I had that. And so I turned around and, it was a yelp for my life. It was,
yeah.
I was afraid for my life, but at the same time, I think I had put in a lot of good prayers, so there was sort of like a trusting sense I had that nothing would go seriously wrong. I was very
calm.
No, I wasn't calm. I was shook up, but in a good way. But it was a real rush, to say the least.
Well, I can imagine just staring down a grizzly, and yeah, that would be a bit of a rush. Now we briefly mentioned the entire sweating thing, you know, going into the sweat lodge and whatnot. You and I have done that informally. I know I haven't experienced the entire thing, but have you? And if so, what's it like?
I've been to a few different sweat lodges, and so they're all different. Each sweat lodge conductor has earned that right to hold a sweat, and it usually takes a lot of training, and it's not something that you just conduct lightly. So So there's usually a purpose for each type of sweat lodge. There's usually a type of sweat lodge. So there's bear lodges. There's a turtle lodge that I sweat often. And some are for healing, and some are for like someone's family might have a sweat just for their family. But basically, we're giving thanks for. In the sweat that I go to most often, we're giving thanks to our grandfathers, right, which we symbolize with the rocks that we bring in. And so they're sort of, they've sacrificed, we see them as having sacrificed their lives to bring us up to this point in history and in life. So we're giving thanks to them and we're praying that for good things for our families and whatever we're struggling with. Then we also practice songs. And songs are another way of praying that also carry a lot of knowledge about how to relate to the living world of animals, because there's a lot of different songs that are dedicated for certain animals. And we're giving thanks to basically everything. And we have a way of giving thanks for everything. We try to acknowledge everything. And so it's a time to reflect about your health as well, and the health of other people around you. And they're also connected. So someone from one sweat lodge may go to another sweat lodge and share some of the prayers. And there's protocols that go along with asking for certain help with certain things, and there's all kinds of knowledge that's held symbolically in these types of ceremonies.
Now, as you mentioned at the top of the show, you're also going to university. What are you studying?
I've been studying integrated sciences and indigenous studies, and I've taken a few opportunities to work, and so right now I'm just finishing up an honors project at Carleton University.
Fun. So what do you hope to do after university?
Well, my grandma Jean, she says doctor, lawyer, or Indian chief. So
I can see you doing all three.
Still aiming for one of those three things. It's pretty traditional, I guess you could say, but those are the ultimate goals. But I realize that there's a lot of other opportunities out there that to contribute to the indigenous community. And I'm interested in the Indigenous Law Program at UVic. And if I were to go the medical route, I'd be looking at doing some sort of health sciences or something related to that in a master's program.
Sounds like a good time. So we're just going to go on a quick music break here, folks. We'll be back shortly with Rustin Fellows, and I hope you're enjoying the show so far. This is River of Jordan by the rapper Lecrae. Bye. We're back here on the Radio Laurier Bravo Sierra Hour. I'm joined by Rustin Fellows. So, Russ, as a university student, what sort of indigenous programs, activities would you like to see at your university that could be transferable over here to Laurier?
some of the programs that were really helpful for me and my experience at university were a program called the Aboriginal Enriched Support Program, or the Indigenous Enriched Support Program now, and that is basically to help Indigenous students transition into university, and for them to receive mentorship from other Indigenous students who have gone through university. And it was really helpful because you, as an Indigenous student, if you're taking Indigenous studies or any other program, you're often hearing and learning a lot about some of these historical and ongoing wrongs that are taking place with Canada, and it can be heavy. And to balance that with school, it's good to have someone who's done it already and who's on that path as well, sort of help guide you along and be there if you need to talk or have any questions about things. So that was a really good program at Carleton. And there's also a Indigenous Student Center, Success Center, where they offer opportunities to connect with cultural practices and activities. That can be a really good way to balance out study and coursework with something that's healthy and that you get to learn about your own culture, share it, learn about other people's cultures, and share it with the rest of the campus. And so like having an actual physical space allows for a lot of that programming to happen. And it can act like as a gathering place where you can meet other students. So that was really a huge thing for us on our campus.
Now, when you went there, did you learn anything new that you might not have known before? Like, oh, I didn't know that this group does this, or something along those lines.
Oh, yeah. I've learned tons of stuff like that. Where I'm at Carleton, we're on unceded Algonquin territory, so I've learned quite a bit about a few Indigenous or Algonquin birch bark crafting of canoes. We made a canoe at Carleton. That was a lot of fun, and a very good learning exercise. And I've learned about the neighbors up here, the Mohawks, and basket making, and with ash wood. That's been greatly affected by the ash borer beetle, which apparently someone was telling me recently that they may be on all this cold weather may have
wiped
them out. So that's good, because they're one of the most devastating invasive species.
So we're freezing our balls off, but it's for a good cause. We're eliminating an invasive species.
Yeah.
So quit complaining about having to watch class in negative 34. It's all right. We're eliminating a species so that we can have cool treats.
Exactly.
So I'm also, and I know you know this, but I love hunting. You and I have gone hunting before, and it was a great time. Would you say that there's any aspects of Indigenous hunting that could be brought over to modern hunting that would be very beneficial? Like, I know we've talked in the past about how Indigenous tribes would have certain things that they would hunt. I could be completely messing that up, but...
No, that's right. For sure. There's just in the way that you give thanks and use every part of the animal, learning to use every part of the animal, it would go a long way, so we're not wasting and not just hunting for sport. And there's a lot of deer and stuff in certain places. Sometimes there's an overpopulation, but we need to eat food. There's a lot of hungry people as well. So anytime you can hunt, you're hunting, if you can bring it to your elders first, make sure that your grandparents are fed and that your community is fed. There's no reason to waste what you're hunting, say just for the antlers or something like that. What else? You can eat things that, I mean, there's ways to cook things that you might not normally eat, like Canadian geese,
which are delicious.
That was a good feast we had at Christmas.
It was. And speaking of which, I'm getting texts from one of our fellow hunters saying, "You sound very tired. You all right there, buddy?"
What else do we got?
Well, me and you have spent multiple summers up at our cottage, and we both know that was really fun. Do you have any sort of fun stories that, because I know we both have a boatload of stories. Some of them we can't share on air, of course, but just a lot of fun stories. Were you the one that discovered that huge rock out in the lake, Cadillac Rock?
That's the way the story goes, I've heard, but I don't think so. But that's an interesting, that reminds me of something. There's these rocks I want to check out that are up by Birch Island, and they're called Singing Stones. And the reason they're called Singing Stones is when you tap on them, they actually make a sound, and they can be heard from miles away. And they were used back in the day to warn other indigenous groups about English and the Mohawks. But some of them were destroyed because the English didn't want
them to be warning, like, "Hey, the English are coming." Oh crap, they're using these rocks. Ugh.
But my theory is that I should look into this more, but the way that they make them sing, sometimes when we're sweating, we heat up these rocks, and some of the rocks, when they get really hot, they start to sing like that as well. And when you tap on them, they sort of sound like hollow or something. And so my theory is that these massive glacial rocks, like the Cadillac Rock in Lake Huron, were heated up. There were probably like massive fires around them, potentially. And
would this have been like pre-glacier and all that, or?
This would have been post-glacier, because the Great Lakes and where those rocks are on Birch Island up in Georgian Bay. I think they were left behind by the glacier.
Okay, so the glacier sort of brought them along and then sort of left them there. Now, would the glacier have hollowed them out, or would that have just been nature doing its thing?
No, the glacier would have. No, they're not actually hollow. They just sound hollow because of something that happens when you heat them up. Maybe there's something that happens. I want to look it up, but so there's lots to learn, and as a student, you just gotta keep at it, and peers and your support circle for
advice,
mentorship, and guidance when you can. Yeah.
Now you'd mentioned that you wanted to, that your grandma was saying you could either be a lawyer, doctor, or a chief. I've done a little research. I've noticed that a lot of indigenous cultures use tobacco as sort of a medicine, and in multiple traditions. What's that about? Because I just was scrolling through the internet, and I know the internet is not the most reliable source in the world.
Yeah, so tobacco is a plant that was used by indigenous people in a different way than the way it's used now. And from what I've learned, in some cases, even in a medicinal way. And but the way it's used now, mostly, is used to acknowledge and give thanks for basically whatever you need to give thanks for. It's sort of like an offering, and a way that you can show that, say if you're asking an elder about something like the singing rocks, you can show that the intentions behind why you're asking, what you're asking, are good, are coming from a good place, and that you're willing to follow protocol, and respect the difference in views of indigenous people. So it goes back, and there are, you know, reasons for the use of tobacco.
So would they grow tobacco, or would they just sort of go out, find it, and then bring it back?
Tobacco, so from what I've learned, tobacco was actually grown all across Turtle Island, North America, and in South America as well. And I actually received some tobacco seeds at the beginning of my undergrad from someone from my community, from Waupu Island, where my grandmother's from. And he shared with me that these seeds, I traded them for some sage with him, but he was telling me that these seeds are actually used and bred sort of over generations.
Oh, wow.
Of growing it, and were used in South America and traded all the way up here. So they were grown all over the place, and there's different varieties, but this particular variety goes way back, and it's called Mapacho in South America.
So,
and yeah.
No, keep going. I was just thinking.
It's also called Rustica, Nicotina Rustica, and it's a very strong nicotine content tobacco.
So what would they use it? What would they use it for? Like, would they use it for cooking? Would they actually smoke it? What would it be used for?
Sometimes it would be, from what I understand, it's smoked in pipes, which is a lot different than smoking it in a
cigar or
cigarette form, but it still has its health implications. But it's smoked in the pipe, but it's also often smoked with a blend of other things. It's not usually just tobacco. There's the Algonquins up here call it kinnikinick, and it's kind of like a blend of other herbs that have medicinal properties.
So would it, say someone was sick, would it be given to them just to smoke, or would it also, or would they just have it for spiritual purposes as well, or was it strictly medicinal, you smoke this when you have a cold or whatever?
I don't have that kind of knowledge.
Okay.
It's something I've thought about, but there's a lot of ways to consume these medicines, not just smoking. And sometimes the smoking is a small part of it. From my experience, and you can make teas with a lot of these things. I think you can make tea with tobacco. I've heard of that. But I don't know those teachings. There's a lot of plants that can be used that, you know, we wouldn't think to use.
So if you did go into medicine, would you go into more indigenous medicine or modern medicine?
I would like to see there not be a distinction. I would like to see some of the indigenous practices be available for indigenous patients, be allowed in hospitals or in indigenous hospitals. But it should be available for any indigenous patient. They should have access to
their own medication.
Yeah. So stuff like having access to a smudge, there's got to be ways for patients to be able to have the certain spaces that are have the ventilation or whatever is required by the.
Now explain. Explain smudge for those who might not know what exactly it is, because I've seen you do it before and it's actually really interesting. But explain it for those who might not know exactly what it is, the practice behind it, things like that.
So smudging is the burning of some of these medicinal plants. One common one is sage, which they've done scientific studies on, and they found that that there is an antimicrobial property to it. So when you put it over you, the smoke over you, and you can sort of think good thoughts or some of the teachings, and you can put it where you feel like you need it, and that can be sort of a protective
protection against different things,
protective and cleansing. So I mean, it's not going to be your only medicine for when you have a cold, I don't think,
definitely a good one to have.
It's a good one to have around, and it's also just about, you know, when you want to speak, like I usually put this much over my my ears and my mouth and my mind, my eyes, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, speak with in a good way, you know, see people in a good way, smell things in a good way, hear what people have to say in a good way, and so it's just kind of like a meditative practice too. And then the smoke and the smudge is kind of like a symbolic
reminder,
representation of that. Yeah.
So it's not just for medicinal, but it's also meditation and sort of a reminder to have for you anyways, a good outlook on people and life in general.
Yeah, it's important. It's important for me to be able to see those symbols when I'm thinking about you know, what I'm grateful for. So yeah, it gives a symbol, something tangible that you can remind yourself about those things with.
So we're just gonna do another quick music break, and we'll be back with more very interesting content right after. We're back here with Bravo Sierra Hour. As you know, I'm DJ Hacksaw. I'm joined by my cousin Rustin. And at the top of the show, we talked about how you got that really cool name and the story behind it. And we briefly, there's a ceremony that goes along with that. Would you care to enlighten us about what that ceremony entails? What's going to happen? I know you had mentioned that you have to get tobacco for it.
Yeah, so I don't know too much about it, but what I was told was to bring some tobacco, and we would typically, the naming ceremony would happen in the longhouse for the Mohawks. But because we're in Ottawa, they're going to accommodate me, and we're going to do it at do the ceremony at Wanique's, Gahunta Netta's daughter's longhouse in Ottawa, at her home, so what it involves is offering the tobacco, and then having their family and my family be there when the name is officially, I guess, put around my neck, and then the thing that with the names is that each name is unique to every person, so there's no other person with Ronana Zagetsko as their name. Gahunda Netta consulted with the other women, the clan mothers who keep track of the names, and there's no other name, so that name is
specifically for you.
Specifically for me, and carried by me until I die and pass it on, and then or till I'm done using it, I guess, because right. It's just the name that I'm going to be wearing around my neck for the next little while, as they say. And but there's other names right now. This is kind of a contentious thing at Carleton with one of the students there is without going too much about it, but there's actually property rights over these names, and the way that Indigenous law works is that there's 150, you say, like in your community, they know you by your name. There's 1,500 people who will stand behind you and say,
"This is your name."
That's your name. That they own that name. That's their name. Like they're that person.
So I can use your name, for example.
Yeah. So it's a different way of law. Instead of having it written down on your birth certificate, it's relational and it's in action, because people know about it, and so you have to make sure that you're using it so that people remember, right, who you are, and yeah.
And not just anyone can get this name, right? I imagine you have to be part of the Indigenous community as well.
Yeah, from what I understand, you have to. You need to be a part and.
So, for example, couldn't get one of these names because I'm.
Well, you probably could, if you were to build the relations and maintain them and be willing to, and if you wanted one and set and made that your intention. Adopting and exchange between families is. Is pretty common in Indigenous country, and
but I imagine there's a lot of work that would have to go into that, you know, building those relationships and things like that. Like, I know you've done a lot.
It's good work. It's good work, though, and naturally.
And how do they decide on the name? Like, I know for you, obviously, there's that big event with the bear, but does something huge like that have to happen, or can it be just something subtle like one who is kind or things like that?
Yeah, I don't want to go into too much about some of the other names because I don't know too as much as I would feel comfortable to share, but there's often like and for Mohawk names, for instance, they're actions. They're all actions. So their name is it's alive, is the way that Gahantaneta described it, as opposed to something like Rustin.
That doesn't hold the same meaning as an actual action itself.
Yeah, it doesn't have, like, it's kind of like a more like a noun, I guess. Yeah. And Ronana Zagetsko is, yeah, he raised his arms. The me and the bear raised our arms. And so, I've already been thinking about, like, in the back of my mind, I'm not supposed to interpret it, but,
right.
Like, when I work out and stuff, I'm like, yeah, I'm raising arms. It's, like, part of my identity now.
It's part of your motivation of being, almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think that's awesome that you can have that such a tight community that they know so much that they can give you such an amazing name like that.
I feel pretty pretty privileged and lucky to be a part of the community.
And I don't know if you can speak to this, so you can just say, I don't know. But is this a common practice for most indigenous populace, or is this specifically a Mohawk thing, the name giving?
No, the naming thing is pretty common. Everyone's got to have a name in most cases. So indigenous people, like on my grandma's community, one of my other cousins is called the Bwaywin.
And what does that mean?
Truth. In Anishinaabe Moan, and there's also like nicknames. Like everyone at my grandma's community in Walpole Island, they all have like nicknames.
Do you have a nickname?
The closest thing I have to an Indian name or a nickname that comes from my grandma was Settle Down. So that was our joke. So I was Settle Down. But there's all kinds of awesome nicknames in Walpole that...
I think that could be the nickname for most of us in the Fellows Clan. Settle Down! I'm thinking more of Maddie and Mac, but I mean, you know. So, back on the hunting thing, what would be one thing you've always wanted to, you know, go out hunting for? Would it be turkey, goose, moose, anything like that?
I would like to learn how to hunt moose up here. Is a big delicacy, and for some of my Cree friends, especially moose, is a major delicacy. And some of these Cree dishes, this moose stew is really good. So I would love to be able to learn how to hunt a moose properly. And
now, what do you mean by properly? Would you say like using like actual archery skills in order to hunt that moose, or not to be?
No, it doesn't need to be as romantic. No, like, there's no, like, bow hunting is, people do bow hunt, but moose are more dangerous from what I understand, because they you hunt them during the rut, and so you're calling them close to you, and then you need to be able to clean them properly.
Right, yeah.
And you don't want to cause them any pain when they die. So you want to be able, your shot needs to be perfect.
Just one shot, they're dead. No suffering, nothing, yeah. I saw this one video. You know Joe Rogan, right?
Yeah.
One of his buddies was out hunting moose, and they hit it, and it was a good hit, but the moose, unfortunately, didn't die right away. So it just came running at them, and it was honestly the scariest video I've ever seen in my life, just because you see the guy just holding the video like, sweet, we got it, it was a great hit. Oh, crap, run! You just see this huge moose just come bellowing at them at 100 miles an hour. It was ridiculous.
Yeah, so that's why you gotta, there's a lot to learn about how to stay, yeah, safe, and do it in a way that
the animal doesn't suffer or anything like that.
You don't suffer, you're not risking your, like, you're, I think you are risking your life, but yeah, you're not unnecessarily so.
Yeah. Now, what do you prefer as far as hunting goes? Do you prefer using, say, a shotgun or rifle, or do you prefer the bow hunting just because it is more skillful, per se?
I'm just a beginner hunter.
Me too.
So I don't really have a preference yet. I just like being outdoors.
True.
And
well, we do that camping trip every year, so.
Yeah, that's an important to connect out there.
I think it is. It is definitely important to get out into nature and just sort of experience it. I know some of my best times with you and the family out there just camping in Algonquin, those were some of my favorite memories. Like, I remember we climbed that mountain and all that. That was a great time.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that one time we had to go, we went back and got that Diet Coke for Pup.
Yeah.
The story behind that is our grandfather, he is a huge Diet Coke fan. And I mean very huge. I think, didn't he stop drinking because of Trump?
Yeah, he stopped. Once Trump was got on the bandwagon, he was out of there.
Yeah. That's fair. But yeah, we, Russ and I made a sort of canoe, canoe with a sail.
We made a sail, yeah, with the canoe.
Did that work? It sort of worked, right?
Oh, it worked. It definitely worked. It saved us like probably 2 hours of paddling.
Oh, yeah. But then we went back and got on the Coke, and he had said, I'll give someone $100 if they can get me a Diet Coke. And then we were like, okay, we're going to go to town for a little while. We'll be back. So then we got some firewood. I remember we got that fudge, which was delicious. And then we got him that Diet Coke, and he was good for the money. That's just one of the many fun memories I have from that camping trip. And your infamous rapping as well. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up soon. Are there any last words you want to get out there before we wrap up?
Stay open-minded, people at Laurier campus. Learn about the indigenous people whose territory you're on. Keep at it as students. Just keep at it and
keep working hard. Well, I love seeing the rest. We'd love to get together sometime. Hopefully I can come up to Waterloo come up to Ottawa, or you can come down to Waterloo and we can hang out, go hunting and have a good time. Hopefully everyone's enjoyed this episode of the Brava Sierra Hour. We'll be seeing you next week here 1 p.m.
Some clouds don't go away. Some clouds don't go away. No peace is tied to man. Aren't you tired of living this way, huh? No peace is tied to man. Yeah. We've gone more than a little ways. Lost more than I care to say. You gotta live with a little gray. To realize it never was safe. Some clouds don't go away. Yeah. Change come like the time of day. Sometimes I get carried away. feel safe if it's not too late.